Hello there. This is your volunteer, broadcast reader, Amanda Hoagland, bringing you another reading of Skipping Stones, a multicultural literary magazine that highlights children's writing. Today, we'll be focusing on stories with one main theme, love in all of its sweetest forms. Our first story is aptly named Love, written by Aurora Lee Strandberg, age 13, Michigan. What is love? No proper explanation. No casual thing, the meaning behind it impossible to explain. Maybe love is a moment, a walk on the beach, a shared milkshake, a cold fall day with a warm embrace. Maybe love is a person, not a thought, like your heart is tangled up with them, forever caught. I think it's you, you're what love is about. Oh, this feeling with you, I can't describe it out loud. Your eyes bring me solace, your hands bring me life. Your presence makes me want you, with all my might. Maybe that's what love is, a person who lights you up. What makes you feel alive with one person's touch? I think I found it, a love for me. The sight of her makes it hard to breathe. First time two. When I was younger, I thought my parents were too hard on me. Always pushing, always asking for more. A better grade, less free time, more extracurriculars. It felt like nothing was ever enough. I'd watch my friends laugh off mistakes while I fretted over the lecture I'd get when I got home. Every time I fell short, I'd wonder, why can't they just let me be? But the older I get, the clearer it becomes. This life I'm living is the one they dreamed of. Each opportunity, one they never had. They didn't grow up with choices. My first time to Disney World was their first time too. Dreams were luxuries, a luxury that they earned for me. So when they push me, it is because they see in me the version of themselves that never got the chance. And after the fights, when the words still hang in the air, I remember. This is their first time living too. Their first time being parents. Their love doesn't always sound gentle. Sometimes it sounds like, you can do better, or don't waste this chance. But beneath it, I hear what they really mean. I believe in you. I love you. The next selection we have was also written by Daniel Young, age 16, from New York, and is called Gone in an Instant. Gone in an instant. It is easy to forget the way the morning light spills gold across the floor, how the air smells after rain, how laughter feels when it's real and unexpected, how lucky we are to experience this. We forget that nothing is promised, not the next sunrise, not the voice we expect to answer, not the body that carries us step after step without complaint. Only when it is gone do we hear the silence. Only when it slips away do we feel the weight of absence. But there is still time, always time, to notice, to enjoy the quiet miracles surrounding us, to look closer, to say thank you, to hold it all gently as if it could vanish. Because it can. All of these stories written by these children have been absolutely amazing. What a gift it is to be able to perfectly encapsulate love all around the world in all of its forms, may it be romance, familial, or friendship. It's a truly beautiful thing, and we are so proud of these kids. Up next is Even When It Shakes, written by Roshu Ariel Wu, age 11, from Alberta, Canada. Even When It Shakes. I was 6 when I first arrived in Canada. I pressed my forehead against the airplane window as snow felt like fragile silk. Soft and beautiful, yet cold. Sharper than anything I'd ever felt. I felt small and untethered, like a single snowflake drifting in a world that didn't know me. A world that didn't care if I belonged. I thought of Chengdu, China. The streets I used to run through, the sizzle of street food, the spicy scent of Sichuan peppercorns curling through the night air. Lanterns glowing softly in the dark. My first day of school was terrifying. 20 curious eyes turned toward me. I whispered, "Hello." My throat tightened. My hands were cold. During recess, I watched children run, jump, and laugh while I clutched my lunch, my beloved spicy noodles, and stayed frozen on the sidelines. I smiled when people looked at me, but it was a mask. Then one day, someone sat beside me. She pointed at my noodles and said slowly, "That smells really good." I didn't understand every word, but I understood kindness. Her name was Chloe. That moment was small, but it stayed with me. After that, I began trying to learn English, but I did it alone. I whispered words on my walk home, repeated sentences in front of the mirror until my tongue ached. I stumbled, mispronounced, faltered. Sometimes kids laughed. Once someone copied, or mimicked, the way I spoke, stretching out my words in a strange voice. My face burned, but I smiled anyway. Once, when I stumbled over my words, she leaned closer and said quietly, "You're doing better than you think." I didn't answer, but I remembered. I smiled through the pain. I swallowed the frustration and the shame. I hid my feelings so no one would see the broken pieces of me. Books became my escape. I started with picture books, then small novels, and eventually books far beyond what anyone my age was supposed to be able to understand. Words became wings. Words became armor. Words became a place where I could breathe without judgment. Slowly, I began helping others with English. The girl who once whispered hello became someone people came to for answers. Even after I moved to another city, some people didn't really leave. Years later, I wrote my name on the board to be an MC. When they called my name, my heart stopped. Me? Chosen? After all the fear, all the doubt, all the years of hiding behind a smile, I'd made it. I practiced tirelessly. Every echo of my voice was a preparation, every heartbeat a reminder that I could do this. On the stage, hundreds of eyes watched me, and then I spoke. Good morning, everyone. Clear, sturdy, unwavering. In that moment, the girl who had been afraid, the girl who hid her pain, the girl who felt invisible, began to fade. In her place stood someone new. Brave, seen, alive. I wasn't ashamed anymore. I ate my spicy noodles without hiding them. I wore my Chinese clothes proudly. I played guozheng without hesitation. "I'm from Chengdu," I said. "I'm Chinese." My culture wasn't something to shrink away from. It was my pride, my anchor, my voice. Being new didn't mean erasing home. It meant carrying both Chengdu and Calgary within me. Step by step, word by whispered word, smile by hard-earned smile, and it meant remembering the people who helped me along the way. Chloe showed me what kindness looked like, and slowly, without even realizing it, I began to do the same. When someone new sits quietly at the edge of the playground, I notice. When someone struggles to find the right words, I wait. When someone feels invisible, I try to be the person who sees them. Not because I have to, but because someone once did that for me. This is my story. Not perfect, not easy, but mine. Somewhere along the way, the cold began to fade, and the light grew warm. If you've ever smiled through pain, hidden your feelings, felt small or invisible, you are not alone. You can rise, you can speak, you can belong. Even when your voice is quiet, even when it trembles, even when it's uncertain, it's still yours, and it's always was. All right, and then a quick author's note written by Roshu Ariel Wu. Chloe isn't one person, but many. The quiet kindness that meets us between languages and helps us find our voice. An absolutely beautiful story. Our next story tackles a different kind of love, a love for our planet. The next story is The Windmill That Spoke to the Sky, written by Parth Singla, age 9, from Haryana, India. The Windmill That Spoke to the Sky, a 9-year-old's curious journey into the world of windmills, clean energy, and big dreams. A thing I really enjoy is building things and learning how they work. A few weeks ago, I made a small windmill at home using cardboard, paper, a motor, and a straw. It was part of a DIY project I did for fun, but while doing it, I got super curious. What are real windmills like? How do they help us? Are they just toys, or do they do something important? That's when I started reading and exploring everything I could about windmills, and now I want to share it all with you. A windmill is a machine that uses the wind to spin blades. This spinning action can be used to do work like grinding grain, pumping water, or even generating electricity. In modern times, windmills that create electricity are called wind turbines, but the idea behind them is the same, using the natural power of the wind to help people. I think that's pretty amazing. Wind is free, it's everywhere, and it doesn't pollute the air like cars and factories do. The first windmills were made more than 1,000 years ago. They were used in Persia, which is now called Iran, and they looked very different from the wind turbines we see today. Those early windmills had vertical sails and were mostly used to grind grains into flour. Later, in the Netherlands, people built big wooden windmills with huge blades that turned in the wind. They were used to pump water and keep the land dry. Some of those Dutch windmills are still standing today, and they look like something from a fairy tale. I was curious how they would actually work. I found out that when the wind blows, it pushes the blades of the windmill, making them spin. These blades are attached to a shaft, kind of like a rod. When the blades spin, the shaft spins too. In old windmills, this spinning would turn gears that crushed wheat or pumped water. In new wind turbines, the shaft is connected to a generator, which creates electricity. So the wind isn't just blowing for fun, it's doing something useful. After learning all this, I felt like building a windmill that wasn't just fun, it was powerful. When I put my little windmill near the window and the breeze made the blade spin, I imagined it talking to the wind and saying, "Thank you for the energy." I know that sounds funny, but it felt magical. My windmill didn't power any lights yet, but it did make me feel like an inventor. One of the best things about windmills is that they are good for the earth. They don't make smoke or dirty gas like cars or factories. They don't use fuel that can run out. Wind is a renewable energy, which means it never ends. That's why scientists and engineers are building more and more windmills all over the world to help stop climate change. Windmills help keep our air clean and reduce global warming. That's a big deal. I found out that in India, places like Gujarat and Tamil Nadu have huge wind farms. These are places where many wind turbines are lined up in rows. Other countries, like the USA, China, and Germany, also use a lot of wind energy. Some wind turbines are even built in the sea. Those are called offshore wind farms, and they float and spin in the ocean wind. That's so cool, right? There are also amazing facts about windmills that I never knew. For example, the biggest wind turbine in the world has blades longer than a football field, and one wind turbine can make enough electricity to power hundreds of homes. In Africa, some kids even make windmills from scrap to power lights in their villages. That made me think, if they can do that, maybe I can build something that helps people too. Even though I'm a kid, I believe we can do our part. We can learn about clear energy. We can use less electricity and waste less water. We can build small windmills at home or school. We can talk to our friends about why wind energy is important. And maybe someday, some of us will grow up to become scientists or engineers who build even better wind turbines. So now, even when I see a windmill or a picture of a wind turbine, I don't just think of spinning blades. I think of teamwork between nature and humans. I think of a world where we don't pollute the air and we live in harmony with the sky, the wind, and the land. I imagine windmills waving at the clouds saying, "Let's save the planet together." That's why I called this story The Windmill That Spoke to the Sky, because in my imagination, that's exactly what it does. That was a beautiful story written by Parth Singla, full of interesting facts and just a general will to keep on doing what's right for this earth. Our next story is all about self-love and is called Spiritual Currents, written by Michaela Warner, age 14, grade 9, from Oklahoma. A quick author's note before beginning. Michaela wrote, "This poem is about what my adopted father and second mother taught me in seeking out my inner self in the Native American way. I do enjoy it very much and will learn more about my culture. I wrote this poem because I feel that there will always be a spirit guiding us wherever we go. Even in death, there's a spirit that guides us." Now, spiritual currents. Within each breath, a quiet turning, threads of fire, endless yearning, circles unseen, both rise and fall, whispers bind the vast to the small. Through the earth, soft and wide, spirits dance where truth abide, war streams never seen, flowing light we are forever. They rise so quietly to meet the light, and the seeds of dreams are joy by the mark. On the surface of all the things that heat, our paths where our 2 feet step. Let time stretch, let seasons spin and grow. There's love where hope is the seeds of sorrow. Walking onward hand in hand through light and night, our souls hold tight to what we know was right. Our next story, in a similar vein of learning to love and support yourself, is called Kimberly Woods, Learning to Race for Yourself, written by Georgia Lindman, age 16, canoe slalom athlete, Florida. Kimberly Woods, Learning to Race for Yourself. Why do athletes compete? For many elite athletes, the answer changes over time. Early in their careers, racing is often fueled by ambition and the desire to prove themselves. But as expectations grow and the stakes get higher, competition can begin to feel more like an obligation than an opportunity. For British slalom kayaker Kimberly Woods, that shift happened years ago. The Olympian and multiple-time world champion said she no longer races because she feels she has something to prove. Instead, she competes because she still enjoys the sport itself. "When I was younger, it was always I have to," Woods said. "Now it's I get to." That change in mindset has shaped the way Woods approaches nearly every aspect of competition. Rather than tying her self-worth to race results, she focuses on appreciating the opportunity to stand on the start line. The pressure hasn't disappeared. Woods still feels nervous before races, but she no longer sees those nerves as something to fear. Instead, she describes them as exciting nerves, the kind that come from caring deeply about what she's about to do. If I'm too calm, she said, it's almost like my heart's not in it. For athletes competing at the highest level, nerves are often viewed as something to overcome. Woods sees them differently. To her, they're evidence that the sport still matters. The perspective has developed through years of competing on the international stage, where expectations can easily become overwhelming. When asked about the most meaningful victory of her career, Woods didn't mention the Olympic Games. Instead, she pointed to her first kayak gold medal at the World Cup in Taken, Slovenia. At the time, she was fighting for her place on Great Britain's national team and described feeling isolated from those around her. The race came during one of the most difficult stretches of her career. "I was there for me," Woods said. The realization changed the meaning of the victory. The medal mattered, but so did everything it represented. After years of feeling like she needed to meet other people's expectations, Woods had finally reached a point where she was competing for herself. Looking back, she said canoe slalom has given her much more than medals or international results. The sport has taken her around the world, introduced her to lifelong friends, and shaped the person she has become. "I wouldn't be the same person without canoeing in my life," she said. For Woods, success is no longer measured solely by the podium finishes. It's measured by continuing to love the sport that brought her to the start line in the first place. Excellent writing there by Georgia. Beautiful story about learning to love what you do and learning to support yourself through it. Our next story is called Self-Portrait Friday, an ekphrastic poem after Renee Dawson, and is once again written by Georgia Lindman, age 16, from Florida. "She towered over me, above the plastic building, blocks as my twin, and I played wrestling matches, piano lessons, chess games, Lego building. Bright yellow hair, the color of the school bus, yellow roses that climbed our roof, their seeds scattered across the patio like grains of rice, smelling of fresh-cut grass. A scion halo morphing into the shape of her figure, a naked 21st-century Virgin Mary who eats McDonald's. Surrounded by grass stains, I recognize myself in her. Hair like me, strawy. Curvy like me with defined calves, especially when I run for a week. Peachy undertones, sun-kissed cheeks, like post-school tennis lessons. In her own world, the blues extended to me an invitation to her mind. She's thinking. She's in a different universe, a stimulation in which you wander through shades of blue. You seemed far away once, but now I see you, clear and close." For our final story, we have A Classroom Full of the World, the first prize winner of Skipping Stones Celebrate America 2026 Writing Contest, written by Aneri Kakrania, Grade 5, California. A Classroom Full of the World. My backpack felt bigger than me that day, filled with pencils, hope, and words to say. The morning sun was warm and bright as I walked to school in the golden light. My parents walked beside me, calm and proud, through streets that buzzed with voices loud. My mom fixed my ribbon and smiled with care. My dad gently brushed a strand of my hair. I was born here under America's sky, where dreams feel big and hopes fly high. But my parents came from India, far away, searching for an opportunity in a distant place. They came so that one small girl could grow in a place where endless chances flow, a land where effort lights the way and tomorrow shines brighter than today. Inside the hallways, buzzing with cheer, so many different kids were here. Different faces, cultures, names, different foods and different games. A girl from Mexico waved and said hi. A boy from China smiled and walked by. A friend from Denmark bounced a ball, and a girl from Idaho waved in the hall. At lunchtime, I opened my box to eat, warm rotis and curry smelling sweet. For a moment, I wondered if they would stare at the spices floating through the air. But a girl leaned over with a friendly hum. "That smells amazing. Can I try some?" Soon we were sharing bites and laughs, trading stories across the class. I told them of India my parents knew, of monsoon rains and skies so blue, of cricket games and summer heat, of busy streets and markets sweet. They told me of baseball, pumpkins, and snow, of autumn leaves that brightly glow, of sledding hills and winter cheer and summer camps that come each year. The teacher smiled and wrote on the board, "Welcome, class," in letters adored. She said, "In this room we learn and grow, and every story matters, you know." I looked around at the many bright faces, different languages, cultures, and places, and suddenly something felt so clear. This is what makes this country so dear. America felt like a giant tree, with branches for you and branches for me, each leaf a story, each root a land, yet growing together, hand in hand. It's a place where cultures meet and blend, where strangers smile and become your friend, where children of immigrants stand tall and free, learning together like one big family. So on my first day in fifth grade class, I watched the busy moment pass. Fear turned to laughter, quiet but clear, and suddenly, I was happy here. I thought of my parents standing near, of the long road that brought them here, across the oceans, across the years, through hard work, courage, and hidden tears. My backpack still felt big that day, but my heart felt bigger in every way. Because in this classroom, bright and free, America had made a place for me. That story was absolutely beautiful. A bit of a tearjerker for those who may sympathize. And what a beautiful way to end off all these stories. A quick side note left in here. Aneri was honored during the American Immigration Council's 2026 Immigration Impact Awards on June 19th in San Diego, California. So absolute congratulations to that winner and her beautifully written story. Love is everywhere, and it's in everything we do. It's amazing to see these kids not only understand how holding space in your heart for another, may it be a lover, a friend, a family member, the world, or even yourself, can help transform life, but also be able to write it in such prose. With that, that's all the stories we have time for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Amanda Hoagland, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds. Tune in next week to hear more Skipping Stones.